Broadcasting from the Civic Cypher Studios, welcome to the QR Code, where we share perspective, seek understanding, and shape outcomes. The man you are about to hear from is a man making glasses and a beanie into a fashion trend. He is the Q in the QR Code. He goes by the name of Q Ward.
You know, you guys listen to Ramses make statements like that every day, and I have to break off from introducing him because he can't help himself. But now he's smiling at me, so he get a free pass. He is the R in the QR Code. He goes by the name Ramses Ja.
Indeed. And we need you to stick around a little later on in the show. We are going to be talking about, for our entertainment segment, the Anthony Joshua versus Jake Paul fight. And why I think that a lot of people were tuned into that. There are some political overtones or maybe undertones, maybe some racial ones as well. And so we're going to get into the weeds there. We're going to have some dialogue. You know, Q and I, we are in the habit of asking each other a question. Well, I've heard that men are hard to shop for. Indeed, I confirmed that by Googling it. But we're going to ask each other, what was your favorite gift? And hopefully that will inspire some thoughts if you're doing any last minute shopping. Q Ward's going to clap back about how they borrow from our struggle only to betray us in the end. For better do better, we're going to talk about Donald Trump hanging White House plaques mocking, quote, Hussein Obama and Sleepy Joe. That was a story that we couldn't touch last week because we were pitching, but glad we're able to cover it now. We're going to share our opinions about how Trump is moving to dismantle the climate agency and killing the Senate funding deal in the meantime. And we're going to talk about what's going on in the culture. Recently, Nicki Minaj and Erica Kirk had a conversation at a Turning Point USA event. And we're going to share our thoughts there. But as always, we like to start off with a feel-good feature. And today's feel-good feature, we're going to share some thoughts on how you can get festive. Now, we know that there's a lot of different folks that listen to this show, and we appreciate that. Q and I are Black men. You may know that already. And we like to use this as a window into our culture. For folks that don't know, this is made specifically for you. But for folks who already know enough about our culture, are from our culture, you know, we want to use this as a moment to remind you of some classics. So we're going to suggest some recommendations that we put together of Christmas shows, Christmas movies rather, that have like Black, you know, protagonists, or like they're kind of, you know, around. We're going to give you some family footage of what it's like to celebrate with us. You know, I saw a film. It was a Korean film recently, and I loved it. And I got a chance to see what life is like, you know, for Korean folks. It was a film about a flood or something like that. But I just thought that was special. So in that spirit, I hope to share this with you today. So this is what we put together. Some of these descriptions come from blackamericaweb.com. Okay, first up is The Preacher's Wife. Whitney or Denzel alone could have made this movie a blockbuster hit based on their individual star power. However, as a duo, they delivered an on-screen chemistry that made The Preacher's Wife an instant Christmas classic, not to mention a heavenly soundtrack to boot that only the voice could ever deliver. And so, you know, a classic Christmas film that happened to star some Black folks. And again, you'll get a peek behind the curtain. We're also going to recommend Friday After Next. This is a little hood, but it is indeed a Christmas film, and it's really funny, and it's also of course entertaining, and the introduction to Cat Williams, but you know, Mike Epps, Ice Cube, you know, some favorites in that film. And then finally, Trading Places, which is a snobbish Wall Street commodities broker and a wily street hustler find their positions reversed as part of a bet by two callous millionaire brothers who run a brokerage house, starring Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd. So we hope you have fun, and you pick one or all three of those to maybe grow in terms of your cultural, you know, competencies. And if you already are culturally competent, you know, it's fun for the whole family. So, all right. So let's talk about what's going on in the culture. Okay. So let me paint this picture for folks that don't follow Turning Point USA very closely. Obviously, they're bigger now than they ever were because they're the CEO, Charlie Kirk, was assassinated, you know, and so Charlie Kirk's wife, Erica Kirk, is now kind of running things there. And of course, she and Nicki Minaj had this conversation on stage. So this from TMZ. Nicki Minaj probably wanted a mulligan on her comments about J.D. Vance during a Turning Point USA event, calling the VP an assassin during a chat with Erica Kirk. The rapper appeared on stage at TPUSA's America First Sunday. Sorry, America Fest Sunday, sitting down to heap praise on the current administration while Charlie Kirk's widow asked her questions about her foray into politics. At first, Nikki's getting the crowd energized, telling young men not to be new scum, a dig at California Governor Gavin Newsom. Instead, she encourages them to be like the handsome and dashing President Donald Trump. Nicki Minaj then says, quote, "And you have an amazing role models like the assassin J.D. Vance," unquote. Minaj then trails off while murmurs course through the crowd, and the rapper puts her head in her hands, clearly realizing what she just said. As you know, Charlie Kirk was murdered in September while speaking on a college campus in an alleged political assassination, and Erica's been publicly navigating the difficult past few months. So while Nicki clearly didn't mean to offend her, her comments were an obvious faux pas. Minaj and Kirk also talked about ignoring the haters, bonding over their indifference to angry social media mobs. Nicki's fans love her for speaking her mind, though she may want to read the room before her next big event. Okay. The reason that we kind of felt like this story was a story worth sharing is not because, you know, Nicki Minaj said something and had a gotcha moment on stage or a, you know, she clearly made a mistake. Nicki Minaj doesn't think that J.D. Vance is an assassin. We understand that this happens to people regardless of their political affiliation. This is a human condition. Sometimes people misspeak. But I think that something that really stood out to me in Q, and I'll let you go first here so you can kind of fill this in, is that Nicki Minaj was on this stage in the first place. And for a lot of people who look at this administration and see that it has been decidedly anti-Black in many facets and in much of the administration's undertakings, to see Nicki Minaj on stage at a Turning Point USA event with Erica Kirk espousing the current president and the current administration feels a little strange. How could a Black woman who is so popular and so well regarded end up in a predicament like this where she's doing these things? And it happens. It has happened throughout history, and it is happening now with Nicki Minaj. And for those of us that historically have been fans of her music, it's very sad, but we're going to talk about how these things sort of happen and let you know that it's okay to look at this and feel like this feels a little crazy. So again, Q, I'm gonna let you go first, and then if there's any time left, I'll follow up.
It's an interesting thing to witness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Trump's first go at it, this would have made all the sense in the world. Trump's first go at it, I could see how all the people that supported him supported him. You and I saw through the facade. You and I kind of knew what we were getting right from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. But imagine being a poor white person and then hearing someone like Ramses or Q say white privilege and looking around being very confused. Like, what does that mean? I grew up in a trailer park. My parents are poor. I've never had any advantage in my life. So then us saying white privilege sounds ridiculous. It could be enraging for a person who never feels like they had a foot up or a step ahead, who never had any success, right? The people who we point out vote and organize and rally and chant against their own best interest and their own well-being and their own personal welfare, because the system did this to me. The status quo did this to me, right? So the poor white people, the women, the Black people, the celebrities, the conspiracy theorists, the contrarians, all the people who felt like, yeah, that doing things how they've always been done led us to where we are. So that first time around, it would have made sense. I wouldn't have agreed. I would have tried to tell those people you're being played, but I could have saw how they got there. Mm-hmm. Now, Nikki? Like now? After the truth is crystal clear, after who this man is starkly and vividly revealed in HD 4K, the big screen, the big screen, the 3000 inch.
Dang.
The Jumbotron. After everybody can see in lights who he really is. Now you, Nikki, this is when you get on stage with them now. Right, Charlie Kirk's wife. I almost want to throw to you so I can look up the things that Charlie Kirk said about black women and then
That's okay. Because I got a couple thoughts to share.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So again, for folks that don't know, proximity to whiteness is very alluring, right? You see this happening with groups, every racial group, at different times. You know, you feel like, hey, if I can just be more like them, then I'll be accepted and I'll have all that comes with that. Whether or not folks acknowledge it, there is a privilege that comes with whiteness. And that privilege, the language is a little funny, but the privilege is being able to start at zero. You're not starting behind the starting line. There's no disadvantage in the circumstances of your birth, right? Now, if you're born female, life's going to be a little harder. If you're born black, it's a little harder. If you're born gay, it's a little harder. If you're born with some other sort of handicap, you know, it's going to be a little harder, right? And this is something that is borne out in the data. But that proximity to whiteness and that feeling of being accepted and being welcomed in that world it's a powerfully alluring idea, right? And if you grow up, Nicki Minaj grew up poor as anybody, right? But that mentality, it's hard to shed that mentality. Now, I'm not going to say that Nicki Minaj may not have conservative views and so forth, but going, like you said, going on stage in favor of a decidedly anti-black administration feels crazy. But bear in mind, there were black slave owners, and those black slave owners were some of the toughest black slave owners. That made the most sense in terms of getting proximity to whiteness. It made the most economic sense. And some people, they like the controversy. You know, this is what we saw with, you know, names like Amber Rose. For those that don't know, Amber Rose is a Hollywood person. I don't know what she does, but she's well known for being a Hollywood person. You know, Waka Flocka, these people that could not really justify their position, but appreciated being the bad guy or the alternative and having folks talk about them. So there's an intersection there of a lot of different factors where you end up with black folks that can make sensical arguments. Many cannot. But that's how they end up in these anti-black predicaments, and they just ignore the anti-blackness, espouse the proximity to whiteness, and then they provide cover for all of the anti-black sentiment, because it gives those people a chance to say, well, look at this person is black and they agree with me. All right, Q, I want to make sure the rest of the time is yours to share whatever you have.
Yeah, and he said this in regards to Michelle Obama, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, Joy Reid, and Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. They're coming out and saying, I'm only here because of affirmative action. Yeah, we know you don't have the brain processing power to otherwise be taken seriously. You had to go steal a white person's slot to go be taken somewhat seriously. Now, fact checkers like to say that we are taking him out of context when we say that he stated that black women do not have the brain processing power to be taken seriously. And they say that because they say he was only talking about those women specifically. But the reason he was talking about those women specifically was because they were black women. So it's a little dishonest to say he was taken out of context, but we know what he was trying to say here.
Absolutely. So, all right, let's move on. Trump to dismantle climate agency kills Senate funding deal. Okay, so follow me here. This is from The Hill. a potential deal to fund large swaths of the federal government, including the Departments of Defense and Health and Human Services, collapsed Thursday night after Colorado senators demanded that Congress stop President Trump's effort to dismantle a key climate agency. A Democratic senator involved in the negotiations over passing a five-bill package of appropriations bills before Christmas said Trump's attempt to break up a premier weather and climate center based in Boulder, Colorado, was like a stick of dynamite that exploded any chance of a bipartisan breakthrough on spending. Colorado senators Michael Bennett and John Hickenlooper, both Democrats, objected to moving forward with the so-called minibus spending package that, if enacted into law, would result in 85% to 90% of the federal government being funded through September 2026. Bennett said his Republican colleagues knew how critical the center is to providing scientific analysis of weather patterns. Senate Majority Leader John Thune, a Republican of South Dakota, made a Herculean effort to get the spending package passed before Christmas, and it looked earlier in the day as the Senate might be on track to clinching a deal after conservative GOP senators dropped their objections to the bill. But Bennett and Hickenlooper took the lead in bringing the package to a dead halt by objecting to an agreement to set up a date and amendment votes on the Senate floor. They were infuriated by the Trump administration's announcement Wednesday that it plans to dismantle the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Colorado, a leading research institution specializing in climate science. Now, this is a much longer article. Again, it's from The Hill, and you're welcome to check out the rest of it. But this, I think, is something that we needed to talk about. So I'll go first, your cue. First thing, you know, Q and I, we see the world through a decidedly black lens. I only know how to be black. That's the culture that I come from. That's the way that my grandma prayed for me. That's, you know, the music I listen to, and the way that we speak, and the cultural idioms and those sorts of things, right? So we share this content through that lens. I don't have a different setting. And we feel welcomed as your brothers, whoever you are, even if you're black too, we feel welcomed as your brothers, and we have for a long time. And we appreciate you listening. But there are some conversations that it doesn't matter what culture you're from or what race you're from or what background you're from. Some stuff matters to all of us. And science and climate change and data and those sorts of things, those tend to be, once upon a time, they tended to be great equalizers, and they would neutralize any division because we were all on the same page and subjected to the same consequences. And now we have different interpretations of facts. Q famously says this on our programming all the time. And this administration, if nothing else, if you were the sort of person that, you know, maybe you didn't just, you didn't think of yourself as a racist. You're like, look, I'm not racist. I just don't care enough about black problems or Hispanic problems or whatever other problem, gay problems or women problems. I don't care enough about those problems to not care about mine, right? And that's your take. You're like, look, I'm not racist. I just don't care. Because a lot of people are like that. Voting for this administration still is a shot in your own foot, because we are killing this planet. And that is verifiable by the vast majority of the scientific community. Indeed, I've seen changes in my own lifetime that could only be explained by human disregard for the planet. It's been so rapid. Right, I've seen it. I've lived in places where the climate is very harsh, and we see what happens when it gets more harsh, right? So, talking about things like this and this administration's stance on deregulation so that industry can flourish, and the very decidedly anti-science stance and ignoring our, just this country's impact on the world in favor of economic advancement and economic opportunities. It's like, okay, well, we're going to run this runway as long as we can, and the world that we leave to our children, we'll just leave it to them to clean it up. Ignoring the fact that runaway climate change is probably here already, And if not, we're very close to it. And for people not to heed this moment, to look past the fact that they don't care about Black problems or Hispanic problems or whatever problems, want to focus on themselves and still cast a vote for this administration, you're still shooting yourself in the foot, because we all have to live here. That is a fundamental component of our shared reality. This planet is something that we share, for better or worse. And for folks that have not cared, your apathy has led us to a point where we're even having a conversation about the president dismantling a key scientific station, indeed the National Center for Atmospheric Research. And that's a lot to reconcile. And again, either it's your apathy or it's your outright hatred, but there's no in between. And for those of you that did vote for this administration, whether or not you've come around, this is something that you have to own, because we have to fight just for data to tell us how far along we've fallen. And so I'll leave it right there, because I want to give you plenty of time. Q, your thoughts.
It's infuriating, right? NCAR in Boulder is a cornerstone of global climate and weather science. And that's not a partisan thing, right? Like, it's kind of maddening, right? I was like, we talk about climate. We've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. And not vibes, math. You know what I'm saying? We have to make that. We have to point out the difference, unfortunately. But we're not talking about vibes, we're talking about math, science, data, numbers. I mean, you pointed it out. The same people that say that they're pro-life and pro-family and pro-freedom are running a political project that treats the actual survival of all of us like a punchline. You talked about in our lifetime, we're currently living through heat waves, mega fires, floods, hurricanes, all more intense than what our parents and our grandparents lived through. Yeah. And the science is very, very clear on why. We have the receipts. And, you know, their response is pretend nothing's happening. I guess ignorance is bliss for some of them, but for others, it's a choice. Mm-hmm. They've turned climate change into like a slur, the same thing they did with socialism. They've trained their base to hear those words, you know, things like renewable energy, and think communist, to hear scientists and think enemy. It's the same play they run on every issue. They take something complicated like life or death, they put a partisan wrapper on it, and then they tell people that admitting the reality is somehow a left-wing plot. And now on top of rhetoric, we got an administration that is actively trying to dismantle the research that proves them wrong. So aiming cuts at these type of agencies, the type that tell us when there's a hurricane or a tornado coming, aiming cuts at climate labs, the people who help firefighters, farmers, city. Like, how can the people who are supposed to save our lives help when they don't even have the data that they need? They're yanking data down from websites. Like, imagine watching your house catch on fire and responding by firing the fire department because they told people that there was a fire. That's the level of logic that we have to deal with, Rams, and it's tough, man.
I don't know. But, you know, here we are. Now, if that weren't enough, it is time to talk about who better do better. And once again, we have the President of the United States of America. So I'll paint the picture. Trump hangs White House plaques mocking Hussein Obama, Sleepy Joe Biden. Okay. For what? All right. This is from the BIN. President Donald Trump has installed a series of plaques in the White House that sharply criticize Democratic presidents, including one mocking former President Barack Obama, per NBC News. The plaques found along the White House colonnade lie below portraits of each past president, including Obama, whom Trump refers to as Barack Hussein Obama, and calls one of the most divisive figures in American history. Obama's plaque also takes aim at the Affordable Care Act, which Trump dubs as the highly ineffective Unaffordable Care Act. In its writing, the plaque criticizes the Iran nuclear deal and Paris climate accords and repeats Trump's longstanding claim that Obama spied on his 2016 campaign and presided over what he calls the Russia, Russia, Russia hoax. Obama's plaque is part of a broader display that includes a scathing description of former President Joe Biden. That plaque labels Biden Sleepy Joe Biden and the worst president in American history. It further accuses Biden of severe mental decline, blames his policies for inflation and immigration challenges, and ties his presidency to the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan and global conflicts. White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt confirmed that Trump authored the text of many of the plaques. Quote, the plaques are eloquently written descriptions of each president and the legacy they left behind, unquote, Levitt said in a statement, adding that, quote, many were written directly by the president himself, unquote. Unlike the former Democratic presidents, Trump's plaque praises his first and second terms, highlighting tax cuts, deregulation, immigration policies, and foreign policy actions. The White House declined to share how the plaques were funded or installed. Okay. Those that know why we selected this for Better Do Better. Q, I see your face, and I feel like if I say anything, I'm going to take something away from you, man. Go ahead. Why don't we just sit down?
I have a hard time trying to process because we know who he is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Every time one of his loyalists, one of his bootlickers said something out loud, mm-hmm. it was so eloquently written. Like, what are you talking? Do you know other people can see and hear you say that? Do you like, I heard in our pre-production, we refer to this as petty, but that's not, we've been petty before. Like, petty can be cool and funny. This is just immature. Like, it's like petulant. He's like an 8-year-old that's mad. He's the president of the United States. I have to keep reminding people of that every time he does something so disgusting and classless. Like, everyone, no matter how you feel, should not be okay with the way that he operates.
Yeah.
I think some people are like, well, that's what I would do. That's exactly why you shouldn't be okay with the way that he operates. You're not the president. Mm-hmm. You're not qualified. Neither is he. And that's the whole point of all of this discussion. It's not even about his politics. It's not even about the policies that he does or doesn't pass or write or author or even have people vote on, because I think they've been in session for like 8 days out of the last year, something like that, maybe 90 days. So they're not doing a lot of work. They're not doing a lot to serve the people that voted for them. They're making a lot of money and they're harming a lot of people. But this is, it's just gross, Rams.
Yeah. So I thought that these were the United States of America. Okay. We've been through tough times. We've been through good times. You know, I would imagine that the office of the president should look back and celebrate the presidency. It should seem to onlookers and to outsiders as though this office has held the best that America has to offer. Now, not only are these exaggerations and falsehoods that the president penned in his own childish writing, this isn't eloquent at all. Your point is well made. But also, it makes the presidency look bad, and it makes us as a country look like we're fighting ourselves. And how does that look to the rest of the world? And for what? Who does this benefit? The handful of people that visit the White House that like Trump already, they're not going to like him more because of this. It only serves to say, oh, America's got a problem. Oh, America, This is a divisive man, and I think that this shows exactly how divisive he is. He feeds off of it. He can't help himself. And we're supposed to be united, United States of America, and he's dividing us still, and he won. There's no reason, there's nothing to gain here. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this.